So welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you will find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please help me welcome our speaker, Amy Kay, a compulsive overeater from Virginia and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Amy. Looking forward to hearing you.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. My name is Amy. I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I'm really excited that I get to talk about this on Easter Sunday. I was talking to someone earlier about the shame of childhood on holiday occasions. On Easter, it was the eggs, but on other occasions, it was the other special treats. And I had perfected this way of digging underneath everything. So if it was an egg, I would turn it upside down and I would dig out the insides and then I would put it back down on the grass. And I did the same thing with pies and with cakes. And of course, the time would come when somebody picked up the treat and it would collapse and everyone would know, but I needed it. I needed that. I needed it more than I cared about the embarrassment that was sure to come when it was discovered. And I don't live that way anymore. I first got to Overeaters Anonymous when I was 17 years old. And I'm 57 now, so it's a long time. And I have been maintaining 150-pound weight loss for the last 4 years. And I'm happy to tell you the story about how my abstinence is 4 years old and my OA career is 40 years old. I came to OA and really, I just wanted to lose weight. I was sure that being fat was the reason for everything that was wrong in my life. And now I realize that it's easier to think that it didn't work out with the man, it didn't work out with the job. My parents and my friends didn't treat me the way I wanted to be treated because I was fat, because I was an embarrassment. Today, what I know is that when the fat is out of the way, when the food is out of the way, what's left is my large and in charge personality. And that is really what the problem is. What the Big Book on page 62 calls selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So I have had a lifetime filled with decisions based on self. One of the decisions based on self is that mothers and daughters have really close relationships. I do not have a close relationship with my mother. And so I have used that as a way to beat myself up my whole entire life. I have eaten over my mother. I've eaten with my mother. In fact, most of the years of my life, if I walked into my mother's house, the very first thing I would do completely unconsciously was go straight to the refrigerator because there was some part of me that knew I was not going to get what I was looking for from her. And so food was going to be the next best thing. And food was a problem way before I acknowledged that it was a problem. When I first got to OA, I probably was, I'm going to say 20 or 25 pounds overweight. And when you're a teenager, that's a super duper big deal. But at the highest, well, I don't know what the highest is. I stopped allowing anyone to weigh me at 340 pounds. I could no longer wear clothes. I was sizing out of the clothes at the big girl stores, and did not know what I was going to do next. But I needed the food. I needed the food emotionally. I needed the food psychologically, and I needed the food physically. And when I first got to OA, what I heard for about step one, or what I thought I was hearing, was that we admitted we were powerless over food, and that's why our lives are unmanageable. That's what I thought I was hearing. I absolutely did not take in that, yes, my life is unmanageable when I'm in the food, but my life is unmanageable when I'm not in the food because I'm the one that's managing it. And as long as I'm managing it, I'm going to continue needing to eat. I've just finished a month where I did two committee meetings every single week, and I've had nine speaking engagements. Tonight is the ninth one, and it was way too much, way too much. But my desire for everyone to love me, my desire to appear to be easygoing and compliant, my fear that if I don't say yes right now, you'll never ask me again. All of those things conspired to just give me this pride-fueled month where I pushed and pushed and pushed. And I can tell you that I'm dead tired and that it's the grace of God that my thoughts didn't turn to food. My thoughts did turn to caffeine. That's another of my addictions. And by the grace of God, I didn't have to pick up caffeine. The big lie of these things is that they're performance enhancing. If I'm tired or if I'm sick, my thoughts default to food because I think food's going to somehow make it better. Except it's a lie. Food never makes it better. I don't get more done when I'm eating. I get less done because I'm exhausted from all the digesting that my body has to do. I'm tired from all the weight that I'm lugging around. And my mind is a mess because I'm either recovering from what I just ate or I'm busy thinking about what I'm going to eat next. It's an absolute lie. So what I need to come out of step one with is an understanding that I have a physical allergy, that there are certain substances that are never going to work out for me. For me, it's flour, sugar, and volume. And I also need to come out of it with an understanding that I have a mind that doesn't process reality very well. In fact, if we were to peel back the food, what I would have to say is that my primary addiction is to my own version of reality. I've always believed that I was the smartest person in the room and that everyone should do it my way. And if you did it my way, you would be happy and I would be happy. And of course, that's not true. You have your own way of doing things. And that's how I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. I'm busy imposing my will on you. Sure that it's going to make me happy, but you have your own decisions you want to make. So bossing you around, domineering that large and in charge part of me is what kept ambushing me back into the food. Because I would think that in doing everything for everyone, you would all love me. But in fact, you hated me for being a micromanager, for being bossy, for being controlling, for being so judgmental. Because if I'm telling you how to do it, I'm also telling you that the way you're doing it on your own is not good enough. And while I'm busy telling you that what you're doing is not good enough, there's this heartbeat inside of me. Not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. Because no matter how hard I work, no matter how hard I try, I'm desperately afraid that whatever I do, it won't be good enough. I won't be worth the trouble that I am. I was a person that had sex with everybody. I had sex with everybody because I wanted to compensate for the fact that I was not physically attractive. Some people go in the opposite direction and there's, sexual anorexia. For me, it resulted in promiscuity because I thought if I just say yes to everything, I'll keep getting offers. And I lied and told myself that I was using men to feel better, but really I was allowing them to use me. I get to step two, and I mean, really, there's nowhere else to go. Nowhere else to go. I've basically gotten a death sentence in step one. I am never going to be able to separate myself from the food and the fat and the fear that had been like a box I've been trapped inside my entire life. So I go to step two, not in a very good mood. And I can't tell you that I go out of virtue. I go because there's nowhere else to go. And because heck yeah, there better be a power greater than my own. There's got to be something, or else I've just been created to be tortured. Why am I even alive? And there's a beautiful chapter, chapter four in the big book, called We Agnostics. And that does an incredible job of forcing me to take a look at what are the false ideas, the fixed ideas, the superstitions, the false value system that I've been operating within that separates me from God. I encourage people to read We Agnostics as We Self-Reliant and kind of get out of that any kind of deep religious overtone that, makes people say, if you're anything like me, well, I'm not an atheist. I believe in God, and I'm not an agnostic because I'm a believer. I really am. But the big book is talking about agnosticism in the sense that, yes, I believe that there's a master of the universe. I believe there's a creative spirit, but I'm down here operating as if I'm in charge of everything. And that's where all my trouble is, playing God. And I don't quit playing God again. Oh, I don't quit playing God again out of virtue, or out of some great religious conversion experience that I have in this process. I do it because it doesn't work. That's the only reason I do anything. It's not working out for me. There's a saying that addicts move at the speed of pain. I've experienced a lot of pain in all of the years, all of my years of Overeaters Anonymous prior to the previous 4 years. I have thought that abstinence was the most important thing in my life without exception. That's not true today. My higher power is the most important thing in my life without exception. I have thought that a food plan was a higher power. I have thought that measuring cups and scales were a higher power. I have thought having the greatest sponsor in the world was a higher power, or the strongest, most recovered home group was a higher power, or a psychologist, or a good man, or a hefty bank account. I've used all these lower powers as a higher power. And the truth of the matter is that the connection, direction, security, and self-worth that I've been looking for my whole life, it's already mine in God. You are never going to be able to satisfy me in that arena. I'm a black hole of unworthiness. I'm a heat-seeking missile for approval and affirmation. You're never going to be able to give me everything that I think I need in order to be okay. So when I've gotten step two, when I understand that I need to be restored to sanity, and I am not going to be the one that has the capability to do it, nor is any other human power going to do it, I get to step three. And what step three tells me is that I'm going to turn my will and my life over. I'm going to decide to turn my will and my life over. And I look at my will and my life as my thoughts and my actions. And how am I going to do that? It's not like some throwing my arms up in the air, Calgon, take me away moment. It's not some, let's get in a circle and get on our knees and pray the third step prayer together. It's actually the steps that come after step three. There is no other way to turn my will and my life over unless I am actively working these steps on a daily basis. I get to step four and I find out that I've been walking around my whole life with a baseline selfishness. And that selfishness is I wake up every day with a script. And in my script, this is what's supposed to happen to me. This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is how the day should unfold. This is how the world should unfold. The dishonesty of that is that I don't have that kind of power. The other dishonesty there is that I think if it doesn't go my way, something's wrong. I look for what's wrong instead of what's right. I think that God must not love me or that I haven't tried hard enough because things aren't working out my way. Instead of looking at it as this is the way it's supposed to work out, this is how God is loving me. These things lead me into self-seeking behaviors. I yell at people. I shun them. I gossip about them. I have a need to make other people be wrong so that I can feel right. I have a superior attitude. I'm judgmental. I have a critical spirit. And that judgmentalism is supposed to operate to make me feel better than, mainly because I feel so much less than. The truth is, even if I do manage to judge you enough that I feel superior to you, I'm actually just going to feel separate from you. It's not something that works. In fact, what I find out in step four is that most of the ways that I operate don't work at all. And then I find out about my fear. And my fear is the thing that touches everything. I'm afraid of living because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm afraid of dying. It might hurt. I'm afraid of not having any friends because it'll prove that I'm a loser. I'm afraid of having a ton of friends because now I'm under pressure to make sure that I can maintain those relationships. I'm afraid of everything. And all of my fears are the exact same shape and size as the resentments that are covering them. I have a resentment that my mother doesn't love me as much as I think she should. The fear directly underneath of that is I'm afraid I'm not worthy of any more love. The delusion that's in the midst of that, muddying the water, is that I have a belief that if my mother loved me more and treated me differently, I would be able to love myself more. So this is kind of a big stew. Who wouldn't eat? Who wouldn't eat in the midst of all of this? And these steps are a design for living that helps me take a look at what the trouble is. There are a lot of people that are afraid of step four. They think I'm going to find out who I really am, what I'm really made of. I would challenge that and say, in step four, I find out who I am not. I find out what I've done in the absence of knowing any better how to get my needs met. In the absence of knowing that there is a God who loves me, that I am surrounded by grace, a grace that I cannot earn. So I find out that I've made mistakes, and that relieves me of the belief that I am a mistake. I move on to step five. I tell all these things to another person. Really, the hardest thing is to admit it to myself. But I go to another person, I tell another person, I say it all out loud before God. And I've never once had somebody look at me and say, you belong in an institution. You belong in jail. You should be, you're a social pariah. You should be living out on an island by yourself. I get a reality check that I'm human. I'm pretty much just like everybody else. I get a look at the defects of character that are underneath all of these behaviors. I take a look at my pride. I take a look at my greed. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm looking at the aspects of self. I have a list of all the different ways. We talk a lot in recovery about the bondage of self. I'm selfish. I want things to be my way. I'm self-righteous. I think I'm right and you're wrong. I'm self-pitying. I think that I'm a victim and that you need to change in order for me to be okay. I'm self-seeking. I think I need to be first in line. I think I need to be the most popular person, that if I'm not number one, I'm last. I'm insignificant. I don't matter. I am self-indulgent. I have a sense of entitlement. I think that my needs and my desires getting met are more important than your needs and your desires getting met. I'm self-protecting. I become invulnerable and guarded and lacking trust. You know, all of these aspects of the selfishness and self-centeredness that page 62 is talking about, these are the things that I'm operating with. What becomes clear to me in the course of working these steps is that, do I want to live on self-will or do I want to live on God's will? When the food is out of the way, and the food has to be out of the way for any of this, because when the food's in the way, I'm always going to think that it's because I'm fat. Everything is because I'm fat. It's all because of the food. When the food's out of the way, I can see that what I'm really facing here is, do I want to live a self-reliant life, or do I want to live a God-reliant life? So I get to steps 8 and 9. I've made a list in step 4 about who I've harmed. I'm willing to go to them. I'm willing to say to people, I was wrong. Here's what I know I've done. What do you need to tell me about this? Set things right. But whether I can set them right or not, I'm doing this not because I'm bowing down to people, but because I'm bowing down to the spiritual principles that are going to enable me to live a life free of food. So instead of living a life where I'm continuously throwing snakes under my bed and I can never sleep because I'm so worried about them slithering around down there, and maybe they're going to come out and see the light of day, I'm learning how to live in such a way that I'm not throwing snakes under the bed anymore. Step 10, 11, and 12 are where I live today. And when I say live, I mean, people will talk about them as the maintenance steps. It says my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Function means this is my job, this is my purpose. So I work step 10 on a daily basis. Anytime I feel a disconnect from God, maybe I'm angry, maybe I'm disappointed, maybe I'm frustrated, maybe I'm overly excited, maybe I'm just afraid. Whatever the trouble is, there's a blueprint for me to clear away what blocks me from God. And then kind of in a riff on the St. Francis prayer about, God making us a channel, in step 10, I'm clearing out the channel. In step 11, I'm going to fill the channel back up again. I'm going to do a nightly review each evening. I do it with a partner. In the morning, I'm going to go through the upon awakening routine. And through the day, I'm going to pause and pray. And I pause and pray by text. I make up prayers. I collect prayers. I'll text out, I'm pausing and praying for you to someone all over the world, all day, whenever I have a break at work. And in the moment that I'm typing this out, I'm lifting the other person up to God, and I'm being reminded that my life doesn't work on my own, about my own private needs and my own personal pains, that my life only works when I'm making connections with other people and with God, when I'm learning how to connect with who I was really made to be. So I clear the channel in 10. I fill the channel back up in 11, and then I empty the channel back out into the stream of life in step 12. I help others. And helping others doesn't just come up in the chapter working with others. It's in the forewords. All along, I'm being told that this is not an optional part of the program, that this isn't just about me getting abstinent. This is about me getting abstinent so I can help others. That's my duty. I don't get the power in that step 3 prayer until it's so that I may let others know how I have become free. I'm a pretty selfish person, and I have to tell you that when the phone rings, I'm sometimes, I don't know, I'm busy plotting world domination. I'm counting the money I don't have. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm thinking about me, that's for sure. And I do not want to be interrupted. But thank God I always answer the phone. And no matter what's going on with me, no matter what's going on with you, by the time the call is over, I'm back facing in the right direction, which is outwards to you and to God, instead of that morbid fascination with the inward view about how am I feeling, what's going on with me, taking my emotional temperature. This is an extraordinary way of life. Every single word in the big book absolutely works. If I could have just shut down my magical brain and stopped worshiping the God of reason and my own common sense for all those years, maybe I wouldn't have had to gain and lose over 1,000 pounds. But I can tell you today that I had to do every single one of those huge gains and huge losses to bring me where I am today. I'm not fighting food. I'm not obsessed with my food plan. It's just not there. And I swear that I didn't believe that would ever happen for me. I've been sober many years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it just got taken from me. But I didn't believe that it would happen. I did not believe that it would happen with food. And when I would hear other people say, oh, it's just gone off the radar screen, I thought to myself, yeah, she had 40 or 50 pounds to lose. She doesn't know what she's talking about. But it's true. It really does just go off the radar screen. When I'm focused on the real problem, which is me, and the real solution, which is a power greater than my own, food really isn't in the picture anymore. That's all I have to share. Thank you all very much for listening.
Amy Kay, thank you so much. And wow, to go through that talk 9 times in what, a few weeks?
It's been a month. It's
Unbelievable.
been 4 weeks
Been a
of
month.
March.